Welcome to Five Star Radio. Consider this your warning.
Hey there, cats, kittens. Welcome to the Five Star Radio program. Does that even sound right? I don't know how it sounded right. I feel like I screwed up the word Five Star Radio. I'm not going to re-record this. Here at HalfGuarded.com, I'm Mike Coughlin. And I hope this is your first time listening, because if so, you've just heard the entire quality of this shit fest. We're doing first of two shows in a row this week. Tomorrow we'll be back with a full in-studio. We booked some studio time. I don't know what the hell that means. Preview of UFC 191, the world's pay-per-view that I am far more excited for than I should be. But now we're just doing our usual, well, Mike's unprofessional and he gets bored, and he's going to talk to himself anyway, so he just records it because, yeah. We are here right now as we walk the Brothers McPuggle, and you can hear in the background that annoying sound. Now, if you're from the Midwest, you might instantly recognize it as being cicadas. Cicadas, if you don't know what they are, look them up online. They're these things. I think a lot of people have cicadas. However, I live in an area, and these aren't the normal cicadas. Well, these are, I should say, normal cicadas. But there are these cicadas that come out, I think it's either once every 13 or 18 years. Like, that's their, they like lie dormant or something. Some weird thing like that. And like I said, every 13 or 18 years, something like around those that time period, some obscene amount of time, they come out en masse. Just more than you can imagine. And it's not Illinois. It's like quite literally just the Chicagoland area. It's like the Chicagoland area, kind of like right around the Lake Michigan, Chicago there. And think one or two other places on the planet. One of them maybe in the United States, one of them I want to say it's like Australia or something. It's the damnedest thing. And it's weird, because I think people kind of probably heard cicadas. Maybe, I don't know. At least for me growing up, cicadas are just something you associate with summertime. You just always hear cicadas, especially at night, particularly come August. But the super cicadas, I'll call them. Yeah, look it up. Weird shit. That has anything to do with anything. But we did have something to talk about today, because there was news today. In addition to the fact that one of our most hated articles ever came out, the top 10 most overrated fighters who have ever lived, which I do stand by. And it's funny, like, as I was going through writing the list, I knew who my top three were going to be. I knew it was going to be Wanderlei Silva, Mirko Krokop, and Fyodor Yemelyanenko. And I also knew that, you know, it's not that they're bad, it's just that they're overrated. But as I was trying to find, like, who are the 10 guys? Well, really, 9 plus Lady Cyborg. You know, I hesitated to put Ken Shamrock, Hoist Gracie on the list, but I did because of, well, you can read the article and find out why. But one that surprised me the most, actually, was as I was going through and looking at things and trying to figure out who is overrated and who wasn't and so on and so forth. Like, there were certain guys I was like, is Frank Shamrock overrated? Well, on some level, yes. But the reality is that he really, really was excellent for a couple of years there. About as good as it got. I think that he made, and plus, he's also not talked about. You know, he's not overrated by virtue of the fact that he was part of a historical black hole of MMA. But the one that surprised me actually was Miguel Torres, who I included on the list. Which, I'm probably the only person who's ever said, hey, top 10 most overrated fighters ever, let's put Miguel Torres. But I just started thinking about it because Miguel, you know, had that Henan Barao like streak at one point where it was like some like 30 some odd fights and he hadn't lost. And he was a 135-pound champion in the WEC. And when the Zuffa bought the WEC, and the WEC first kind of, I'll say, quote, became big, got on TV, it was Miguel Torres and Uriah Faber. Those are the two guys that they were building everything around. And I'm kind of sad we never got to see those two fight, because I think it would have actually been a hell of a fight. By the way, sidebar, I actually think Uriah Faber is underrated. Anyways, but Miguel, you know, was one of these guys, and everybody's like, my gosh. And it wasn't just that people were calling him one of the best bantamweights in the world. I accepted that then, and I didn't accept it now. Even though, like a lot of guys, you know, when the UFC came along, and there was money to be made at 135, 145, all of a sudden, all these guys who used to be at 155 pounds were dropping down. I mean, shit, Manny Gambarian, I mean, Armenian scumbag that he may be, was fighting on the Ultimate Fighter and was winning against Nate Diaz before he got injured at 155 pounds, and he's competed down at 135. Obviously, Uriah Faber fought for years at 155 and 145, and then eventually went down to 135. You know, as the talent, as the money became available, the talent became available. Frankie Edgar can easily make 135 pounds. He's talked about it. I think he knows deep down in his soul he can do it, and he wants to do it, because I think that's his chance. He has a chance to be the only guy to ever win titles in three weight classes. BJ Penn could have done it, I think, if he had come along at the right time, but timing just was never quite right. Plus, it's BJ. Not overrated, not underrated, just a waste of talent. So yeah, as the guys came down, all of a sudden Miguel Torres went from champion to challenger to top 5 to top 10 to just kind of gone. And now he's a non-entity. And it turns out that his career was built on the house of cards. Yeah, he had never lost. He was never fighting anybody either. Oh, he had some good wins. Sure, Takeda Mizugaki and such, but good wins does not make you great. And I think the issue I had is that you would hear about Miguel Torres, and the talk was not, oh, this is your number one bantamweight. It was, this is a top 10, top 5 pound for pound in the world. And the reality is that he just never was. He was just a guy who was essentially almost like modern, like in MMA, something we don't see very often, but he's like kind of like how boxers are treated. He went out there and he just basically beat up a bunch of guys, probably roughly my skill level, and amassed a great record. The same thing is, it's kind of the same thing with Fyodor, except for Fyodor, like, you know, he legitimately has a case, I think, to be called the greatest heavyweight ever. My issue with him is more the talk of him being called the greatest ever. And I don't think that's true at all. The Krokop one is definitely just... I know that Tony and I have talked about this for years. I mean, going back years and years, I always thought Krokop was overrated. I remember when he fought Nogueira, I was like, Nogueira's going to beat this dude. He's just not that good. And he really isn't. When you look at the heavyweights that he faced, oh, he beat some guys who were good, but most of them who are either names or guys like Mark Guy Coleman, who, you know, guys way, way, way past their prime, or the only real name of impressiveness is Josh Barnett, who technically has 3 wins over, one of them by fluke injury that Barnett caused himself, one of them by Barnett tapping out in the second fight of the night due to breaking his eye or something like that, which is getting kind of legitimate, but earlier that night, Krokop got to fight Wanderlei Silva, and Barnett had to fight Nogueira. Yeah, no, that doesn't count. Sorry, that ain't a real win. Then there was the second fight that the two had, the middle fight. The Krokop won, but he didn't actually, you know, he won by decision. And it was okay. But it's more like, what the hell is Josh doing? Like, Josh didn't try takedowns. It's almost an indictment of Crow Cop. Kind of looking back at it, you can almost see that Barnett crowded Crow Cop a lot. Anyways, you can read the rest of the piece elsewhere. But the other news, happy news, is that, of course, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira is officially retired. I like to think that it's like Fyodor announces he's coming back to MMA, and Nogueira's like, oh no, I'm leaving. It's not, but it's what it is. I always once had this dream that Rich Franklin would move up to light heavyweight, win the championship, and then Anderson Silva would come up and beat the shit out of him. Like, he would just terrorize him. Just wherever he goes, he'd just follow him and beat the shit out of him. But no, Nogueira's retired now officially at the age of 39. Which, it's weird. Like, for years, I would always think, I can't believe how young he is. And now he's 39, I'm like, okay. I can kind of, he's an old-looking 39, but, I mean, there are times he was like 32, 33, and I'd be like, what the fuck? Think about it, 2010? Is that when he debuted in the UFC? He won the title, the first fight against Heath Herring, which he almost lost, because he connected with one fucking kick out of nowhere. Then he beat Tim Silva at UFC 81. That might have been 2008, 2010, somewhere around there. This is a show that Brock debuted on. I'm trying to remember my years. 2010, I was in law school. 2008, I was doing nothing with my life. 07 was Brock's MMA debut, I think. Or is it 06? No, it may have been 05? Nah, that can't be right. Anyways, was it 07? Maybe it was 07. I don't know. Anyways, the point being that Nogueira's looked old for a long time. Now he finally is old. And he's finally retired. And this is a happy day because he needed to retire, again, half a decade ago. And yet he kept going and kept going and that's just who he was. That's the fighter he was. Nogueira, to me, he's a guy that I would never call overrated. If anything, he's probably underappreciated. I don't even think so. I think that he's been called legend enough that people go, hey, that guy's a legend. And they really should, because he was the first true modern heavyweight. When he came through rings and then made his debut there in Pride, and the first fight just schooled Gary Goodridge with his guard. And it was a guard that people had not seen from a heavyweight in MMA ever. Our heavyweights at the time were Mark Coleman and Mark Kerr and Igor Vochanchin, guys like that. Like, there are some of them were strikers, brawlers, or just big power wrestlers. That was the era of wrestling. More than any other division almost. Well, I don't know, welterweight at times in the UFC. But right, I mean, again, Coleman and Kerr in particular. Even, Fujita was a wrestler and guys like that. Think back to the 2000 Grand Prix. Now, Nogueira comes along, and all of a sudden we had a heavyweight with truly elite, and he really did have world-class black belt jiu-jitsu skills off his back. Even today, that's rare. There still aren't a lot of heavyweights in jiu-jitsu, even pure jiu-jitsu, who are great off their backs. A lot of them are Gabriel Gonzaga types. Not that this guard's bad, but he is a top game jiu-jitsu player. Someone like Verdum obviously has a great guard. And even in jiu-jitsu, he had a great guard. But heavyweight BJJ is still, guy on top oftentimes wins. I've seen a lot of matches at grappling tournaments. And 2-0. One takedown to nothing else. Or one takedown plus into side control with the heavyweights. And we're on, black belts. And that's how it ended. I've seen guys win 3 matches of not actually ever doing anything. They just all won referee's decision. I can't think of his name all of a sudden right now. I'm drawing a blank. But won Abu Dhabi. The absolute. And I think I read that he didn't score a point in the entire absolute division. that he won every match by essentially negative points. His opponents outstalled him. Just astonishing. These guys are very good off their back, but Abu Dhabi implemented rules that were disfavoring guard pullers and things of that sort, which I think is bullshit, but whatever. Different day, different story. So Nogueira comes along in an MMA, he had a guard like nobody had ever seen, really almost an Inoue class, but especially heavyweight. But okay, fine, we've seen good jiu-jitsu guys here and there, but he could box. Oh, Nogueira could box. You know, at the time, he had the world-class hands. In time, we saw guys with really great striking, but Nogueira, even then, you know, he could generally hold his own. His wrestling was never all that great, but his guard was just so dangerous. And, of course, his durability was off the charts. And, unfortunately, that same durability, which has ruined him, I think, for life. The punishment he took in fights was inhuman at times. What Fyodor did to him in the first fight at Pride 25, one of my all-time favorite shows, period. What Fyodor did as far as the ground and pound that Nogueira survived is unreal. Obviously, the Krokop kicked him straight in the head, and Nogueira just ate it. Disgusting. The Bob Sapp fight, my gosh, how did that must have shortened his career. Hell, even Tim Sylvia kept hitting with punches and knocking him down, and Nogueira was just tough and resilient. When Roy Nelson flattened him, Roy Nelson was hitting him with fucking bombs, and Nogueira was still just moving, and, you know, when you finish Nogueira, you didn't just like, you know, he had to go out. Eventually he did, he started to, but he was just getting the shit beat out of him in fights, but he would win. And I think that, as time wore on, people just kind of expected him to rally. And the last time I think that really happened was the Tim Sylvia fight. But he's the only guy to ever hold titles in both the UFC and Pride. Held the Pride Heavyweight Championship and the Pride Interim Heavyweight Championship, which is kind of a bullshit thing. They had to do something for him and Krokop. And obviously he held the UFC Interim Heavyweight Championship when he beat Tim Sylvia. Which was not as much of a bullshit one. If I recall, it was right at the time when Randy was sitting out. I think Randy was still the champion, but I think he was in limbo at the time. And so, that one was not, like I say, was not nearly as much bullshit. It wasn't like your Conor McGregor interim championship where you're like, what the fuck? Where they're just creating interim titles. The fucking dogs are smelling something. What are you guys smelling? This is not cool. But yeah, two titles in the two biggest organizations. Only guy I'd ever do it. Which is, that's a hell of a legacy. Some of that's also just due to the nature of Pride. Didn't have lots of divisions and didn't have lots of champions. Pride only actually ever had two official heavyweight champions. Nogueira and Fyodor, and that's it. Light heavyweight, they had Wanderlei Silva and actually Dan Henderson. Middleweight, Dan Henderson was the only one. Lightweight, Marcus Aurelio and Gomi, I believe. I don't think that there was ever anybody else. I think Kazuo Misaki, I think he won like a tournament or something like that. I am not happy with the way you dogs are walking. That's a proper way to greet the legend, Nogueira. But again, he fought the best that there ever were. There's, I don't know if there's any top heavyweights of his era, the era prior to his, and almost even the modern era that he didn't face. I mean, you look at guys in the UFC right now, he never faced Brock, well, Brock's not in the UFC, never faced Dos Santos, but he had actually trained Dos Santos. But he faced Velasquez, got his ass whooped bad, but he still faced him. I don't think he actually faced Hunt, did he? Or Overeem, thank goodness. But he faced Verdum, beat Verdum. Lost to Verdum also, but he also beat him. I mean, this is a guy who's got wins over Randy Couture. He has a win over Fabricio Verdum. Mark Coleman, Josh Barnett, Semi Schilt, Bob Sapp. You go through and you look at the guys he's got wins over or the guys he's faced. it's basically everyone. And the last few years were, it was always just so sad. This last fight against, what's his face? Tall Freak Boy, which was, it just represents his career in general. He never stopped moving forward. Just get punched, take it, show incredible durability, and never quit. And not just never stop fighting, but not your bullshit, oh, I'm going to pretend that guy, I'm going to make a go of it and be extra showy, like I can go. You know, you see that a lot. Guys are like, you're putting a little too much effort into letting me know that you can fight as opposed to actually fighting. Phil Baroni was always the king of that to me. No, Nogueira was mentally never broken. Let alone, I mean, physically he may have been, but his mind truly could will himself forward. And if there's one saving grace from the last few years of the UFC, and there weren't too many, the Frank Mir losses were disheartening. The Verdum loss, where Verdum... Fucking creepy dude. Where Verdum had obviously aged better. Even though he's only a couple years younger, he hadn't taken the punishment and he was in better shape, better fighter. Snapped Nogueira's arm. Although rewatching that fight, I was surprised. I'm like, Nogueira did okay, actually. And frankly, you know what? Nogueira almost beat Frank Mir, too. You know, he was a millimeter away in a guillotine from beating Frank Mir before he got his arm broke. So, if there's a saving grace, it was the fights with Pee Wee Herman and Brendan Schaub, which were his first two fights ever in his career. And I think not just Brazil, but Rio de Janeiro, his hometown of Brazil. They were right down the street. People always talk about, like, he could walk to the arena. And he got a knockout over Brendan Schaub. At a time when Schaub, I think, was just coming off the Krokop win. And people were kind of like, hey, Brendan Schaub might be okay. And Nogueira knocked him out. And then there was whatever fucking big goofy dude from Indiana. Herman, who was, kind of played heel, did this whole jiu-jitsu sucks, I'm not worried about jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu can't do shit to me gimmick. And he goes down there, and then there is. Nogueira beats him, taps him. In Brazil, The all-time great Brazilian fighter defends the Brazilian art in his hometown. I think that was Nogueira's last win. And he fought once more, I believe, in Brazil. When he lost to Verdum. So if you want to say he did the right thing on the way out, he put over the up-and-coming 36-year-old up-and-coming heavyweight. But again, you can track MMA's growth. He's provided truly historic and memorable fights and moments for himself, for his country, for the sport. The fight with Randy Couture is actually one of those forgotten legendary fights in UFC history, but that was an amazing fight. And it's funny, like, at the time it's kind of like, oh, poor Randy, but, they both were a little old, and they went out there and Nogueira schooled them, basically. Really, really outclassed Randy. But the Bob Sapp fight will forever be one of the greatest fights, period. And when I say fights, I mean actual fights. It was everything that you could represent about jiu-jitsu and about Nogueira himself. Because not that Bob Sapp was, super skilled. Obviously, he wasn't, but being a guy that probably was legitimately 350, 375, 10% body fat, ripped muscle. I mean, that was insane. It's like, yes. Nogueira was the reigning champion. He was the best heavyweight, blah, blah, blah. He was the best heavyweight in the world, giving up 125 to maybe 150 pounds of essentially all muscle. I don't care. I mean, that's Demetrius Johnson fighting Cain Velasquez. Only more of a size difference. It's like Demetrius Johnson fighting Brock Lesnar and winning. In fact, it kind of would be like that because Lesnar was not all that skilled at one time. You know, imagine like if Demetrius Johnson right now against Brock Lesnar in Brock's first fight or second fight. It's still not totally accurate because Brock obviously could wrestle. And you know, Bob Sapp wasn't... He almost made the couple of NFL teams, but not due to skill, but due to his freak athleticism and size. Guys just weren't and aren't built that big while simultaneously being that fast, explosive, and agile. No, he wasn't Brock-like, but in some respects it was basically just as dangerous. Fucking Bob Sapp almost had 100, probably had 100 pounds of muscle on Brock Lesnar. And when he did it, O'Gara and tossing him around, dumping him like it was nothing. And a few months later, remember, Bob Sapp went out there and he beat the greatest living kickboxer, Ernesto Hoost, in kickboxing. He did it twice. Bob Sapp was dangerous as shit. And O'Gara took everything he could, you know, that legendary power. It's not even a power bomb. I don't even know what the fuck you'd call it. Stuff pile driver type of deal in the first 10 seconds of their fight and getting power bombed multiple times and taking gigantic blows, and Nogueira would defend well. He would get to his feet. He would box him. He'd sweep him. There was one point where Nogueira swept Bob Sapp. Bob Sapp was so big and so strong that with one arm, he just pushed Nogueira off him. We're talking a world-class jiu-jitsu practitioner here, and you don't just push somebody like that. Their hips and everything, knowing where they are, Nogueira's entire life, it had prepared him to be on top at that moment. Bob Sapp was so big and so strong that he just pushed him over with one hand. That's the kind of freak that Nogueira faced, and Nogueira beat him. Nogueira tapped him out with an armbar. He wore the beast down, sure. But here's the thing. He could wear him down. Why is the dog halfway up the stairs? Looking at me. Nogueira was so skilled that he could survive that onslaught. Then followed that up by fighting Sammy Schilt, the tallest fighter in MMA history. And Sammy Schilt would go on to be one of the greatest kickboxers of all time. He hadn't quite figured it out. Nogueira tapped him out. And the fights with Fyodor, he's basically was the only guy in that era, that prime era, that gave Fyodor any real trouble. And I think that if that second fight they had hadn't ended due to the headbutt. Another instance of pride bullshit. Oh yeah, they'll fight twice in the same night. First fight, Nogueira gets to take on Sergey Kharitonov, who at the time was a top 10 heavyweight and was actually a very, very, very good fighter. Sad, I don't really, he just kind of petered out. He was an amazing, amazing fighter, though. And Nogueira got to fight him in the first round and go through this war. And Fyodor got Ogawa because they wanted to draw. And in theory, if Ogawa had beat Fyodor, it would have been, legendary for the Japanese. But he didn't because Ogawa couldn't fight, despite being a world-class judoka. And so they met in the finals, and it was apparent to me, watching them go, Nogueira had learned something. He was fighting differently. I think that they went in there, and on the ground, Nogueira, despite what he'd already been through, had better cardio. I think he was better conditioned than Fyodor, and he was pushing it. And Emelianenko wasn't reacting quite the same. I think in the first fight, Nogueira was a little more passive. He was looking for an opening. He was expecting, he was taking his time. He wasn't going all out. He was waiting for kind of, I'll say, the perfect triangle, which a lot of jiu-jitsu guys get in that habit where you don't want to force it. And the second fight, he just attacked and attacked and attacked. And Fyodor wasn't reacting right to it. He was a little hesitant. And unfortunately, they clashed heads and a cut to Fyodor, I believe, actually. Made it so the fight couldn't continue, so they ruled it a no contest. Then when they fought a third time, the fight was different. And now Fyodor suddenly was standing. and most of the fight took place boxing. And even though Nogueira was a good boxer, Fyodor was used his speed and quickness. Fyodor made the adjustment, but it took him a little bit of time. I think Nogueira could have been the first guy to beat Fyodor. But hey, you know, them's the breaks. And of course, after all that, what's, you know, Nogueira there, he just goes out there and he keeps fighting the best that Pride had to offer. Split two fights with Josh Barnett, I think. And I think that was kind of fair. You could have argued that either guy won either fight. Beat Krokop, beat Barnett. Go on there and fight Heath Herring again, just randomly. It seemed like if there was anybody who was good, Nogueira was fighting them. And they weren't always great, you know. You wouldn't call them always the best known, or they didn't all leave the greatest impression or whatever, but. Oh, and he had his gimme fights, sure. I mean, there was the weird shit where he'd face fucking Sanae Kakuda because, you know, it was Japan. And then, of course, he comes to the UFC. That's one of my crutches, isn't it? Shows up in the UFC, beats Tim Sylvia, the reigning, well, for the interim championship. But, at the time, it was not a joke. I mean, Tim Sylvia is a big, that lumbering slop piece of shit. But he really was one of the UFC's top five heavyweights. And yes, he would lose the title to Mir, who would then lose it to Brock. And obviously, you know, Nogueira's career petered off, as we've talked about. But for 15-plus years, the guy fought the very, very best. And more often than not, he won. And he won in incredible displays where he would outclass people. He won using more mental. He may be the strongest fighter mentally I've ever seen. He actually makes out, he may be the one that took all of the mental weakness the Brazilians possess, except for he got all their strength. You know, Brazilian fighters, as I always bet against them when it comes to, be mentally strong, but not Nogueira. He never broke. You never saw him quit. He always fought. He was well-rounded. He was always seemed like the nicest guy. He had the unfortunate indignity of having the most uncreative parents ever. Because who the fuck has twins and names them Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira and Antonio Rogério Nogueira? I understand that Rodrigo and Rogério are actually different names. And maybe to the Portuguese ear, they sound the difference between Sam and John or something like that. I don't think so. I think in any fucking language, Rodrigo and Rogério sound very, very similar. It's like you wouldn't name your kids, it'd be like if their names were Antonio Randy Nogueira and Antonio Robert Nogueira. Maybe that's the difference. It's still, they're almost the same. And then the dickhead twins, Minotauro and Minotauro, I still don't really actually know the difference. I think it's just a Portuguese way of, you know, Minotaur, the animal, the mythological, the animal. That's right, Minotaurs are now animals, they actually exist. The mythological creature existing, and I think one of them maybe is just small and big Minotaur. I don't fucking know. It's Brazil. But he overcame all that. He overcame the fact that when he, in his younger days, he was stabbed in the back. Literally stabbed in the back with a knife. That's why he always had that awkward looking groove in his back, because he had that a nasty scar and a cut. He was run over by a truck and was in a coma for several weeks in his younger days. This is a guy who, not just in the cage, but out of it. Not just in the ring, but out of it. Truly never quit. He always talked about, you know, you got hit there, the bus. He got hit by a fucking bus. He got hit by a truck and he didn't stop. A truck ran him over and he wouldn't quit. Holy shit. That's really the only, that I think holy shit is the best way to sum up Nogueira's entire career. There were so many times when he would win, you went, holy shit. When he showed up and you'd never seen a heavyweight move like that in any area, you went, holy shit. When he almost died at the hands of Bob Sapp, you went, holy shit. When he tapped off Bob Sapp, you went, holy shit. When he survived Krokop's head kick, you went, holy shit. When he taps out Krokop, you went, holy shit. When he tapped out Tim Sylvia, you went, praise Jesus. But, you know, for all these times, even at the end when you expected him to die every time he fought, and he still had the two, you know, wins, the Schaub and the Herman wins. You went, especially the Ren Schaub with the big knockout, you went, what's your reaction? You went, holy shit. The only way to describe Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira's career is, holy shit, it was great, and so was he. And that's it for Five Star Radio here at HalfGuarded.com. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, previewing UFC 191. We will be doing all kinds of stuff. As always, this site is the best site in the world because HalfGuarded.com has the best content in the world, rarely produced by me, usually produced by people that make me say, holy shit. So until that time comes, I am your humble host, Mike Coughlin, saying to one and all, good fight, good night. And holy shit!
I was a five-star man before the internet, and I'm damn sure a five-star man now, okay? I just gotta drop the dead weight so I can shine.